Okay, I'm going to call to order this meeting of the Senate Committee on the Environment and Natural Resources. It is Monday, February 26th, 2018. And today, colleagues, we're here for an informational meeting on bottle drop redemption centers and the bottle drop system writ large. And we're going to hear about the impact of not only the rollout of the redemption centers, but also the impact of the new 10-cent redemption charge and the new product that's covered. And this is going to be your opportunity to ask any questions related to this program, because I know many of our constituents are curious about it and about its future. And so we have gone straight to the top in terms of the brains behind this operation, and I am happy to call up Jules Bailey.
Jimmy,
many of you used to know this gentleman, but he is a completely different person now.
So there's life after the legislature?
We'll find out.
Well, thank you, Chair Dembro. It's the first time with my height anybody's ever said straight to the top, but appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I'm Jules Bailey. I'm Chief Stewardship Officer for Oregon Beverage Recycling Cooperative, and I really appreciate this committee's time. I know you all have a ton of things going on towards the end of session, and so setting aside some time. And I noted, by the way, that there's nothing else on the calendar, so you have 2 hours to pound me, but I did plan a 30-minute presentation here. I'm looking at you, Senator Pence. But
you could shorten that to 10 minutes. We'd be really appreciative.
I said 15.
Sounds good. Joking aside, this is a really important time to have an update on the bottle bill for a couple of reasons. One, as you all know, the changes that went into effect last year and just last month have meant significant changes within the redemption process. So last year on April 1st, the deposit increased from a nickel to a dime. And then on January 1st of this year, additional products came into the bottle bill so that almost every beverage is covered with the exception of liquor, wine, milk, and nutritional supplements with some little gradations in there. But vast majority of beverages are now covered under the bottle bill. So what that has meant has been a significant increase in the volume of returns that are coming through the redemption system. Not only is that important from a recycling and consumer and litter perspective, but also because you've seen global markets shift dramatically with regards to recycling, and we'll get into a little bit of that as well. Some of you have heard that China is no longer accepting municipal mixed recycling waste, particularly plastic and paper, over in China, where the vast majority of that was going. A lot of that is now, unfortunately, having to find other areas to be recycled. It's been more difficult. And the redemption system in Oregon, 100% of all material that comes through the bottle bill, if you redeem your container for your 10 cents, it all gets recycled, and most of it gets recycled in Oregon. It all gets recycled in the United States. And for plastic in particular, every single bottle redeemed in the state of Oregon gets recycled at a facility in St. Helens and then turned into PET flake that they can go right into making new products. So we think it's an important time to have more containers in the bottle bill, specifically because the international market has been so challenging, and we're able to do more of that here. But I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. I want to go through a brief PowerPoint presentation, because I know that everybody has a little bit of a different background with the bottle bill, and for our large viewing audience at home, not all of them may be familiar with the bottle bill and with Oregon Beverage Recycling Cooperative and bottle drop. So I want to just take a minute to go through the basics, and apologies if this is some of the stuff that that you already know. So, brief history of the bottle bill. As you know, Oregon was the first state in 1971 to have a bottle bill at 5 cents, and it is fairly unique in that in 1971, the legislature made a bottle bill that was really aspirational and not prescriptive, and essentially said you should be able to return your containers for 5 cents, and distributors shall pick them up. Okay, private industry, go figure out how to make that work. And that has been a real hallmark of the Oregon system, has been that it's a privately run system, and as such is pretty efficient. 2009, bottled water was added. That was a major change in the system because bottled water is distributed differently than carbonated beverages and particularly than alcohol, and that led to the creation of Oregon Beverage Recycling Cooperative. 2011, the legislature authorized the pilot programs for the bottle drop redemption centers, recognizing that a lot more volume was starting to come through stores. The value of the nickel had fallen a little bit, and that it made more sense to centralize high volume returns in a specific center while still allowing for families and lower volume returns other options to redeem. And then in 2017, I mentioned the 10 cents, and then 2018, the expansion. So who are we? We are a cooperative of the beverage industry. We're a cooperative of distributors. And we'll get into some of these numbers a little bit more as we get into the annual report that you have in front of you. But we're essentially, to use a jargony term, a vertically integrated company. We control the entire system, all the way from the time that it goes into the machine or in your green bag, all the way to the time that it gets processed for recycling. And because of that, we are a company that wears a lot of different hats. We are a collection company. We're a machine servicing company. We're a trucking company. We are a retail company. And we're a stewardship company all at the same time. And what that has meant has been that because we're able to balance costs across all of those areas and be able to be efficient and operate as a not-for-profit cooperative at every step of the way and not have additional mouths to feed at the trough, as it were, we operate at the lowest cost per container of any redemption system in North America, including Canada, and they've been doing it a while. So for containers that go through our bottle drop centers, through the reverse vending machines, we are less than 2 cents per container, which when you probably doesn't mean a lot to you all, but when you say it to people in other parts of the country, then their jaws drop, because that's actually a pretty efficient way to process containers. And the operative point at the bottom is zero taxpayer dollars go into this. It's entirely privately run. 10 cents sparked huge demand. I actually took these photos at the Tigard Redemption Center. We had lines out the door. And I took these photos because I think this is really emblematic of a lot of what I think makes the Bottle Bill special. There's a lot of people that bring their kids in and teach them about the value of a dollar, help them save up for their allowance, teach them about recycling and litter. So it really is sort of a family operation. And what we saw, and you'll see this again in the report, the redemption rate was at about 64% in the year before the deposit increased, and now it's stabilized at about 82%. So that's a big increase. And the legislature had set a target of 80% as the goal. So we're already over that, and we expect to continue to do very well. That will shift somewhat as new containers come in. There will be a learning period as people learn that new containers are redeemable. But at 10 cents, that learning process is already happening very quickly, and we're already seeing a lot more redemption. With the expansion, it's brought in, as I said, a lot of other types of beverages. Kombucha in 1971, who knew that there would be kombucha in the bottle bill? Monster energy drinks, all sorts of things that just weren't around in 71. The interesting thing about this, though, is that as we look at our data for what that's going to look like in terms of redemption, we've already seen these containers coming through the system. But you might note that a large volume of the expanded containers are things like Gatorade, I mentioned Monster energy drinks, other kinds of energy drinks. A lot of that is in the expanded class. Those tend to be, we at least believe, heavily summer peaking beverages. Not a lot of people drinking a lot of Gatorade in the middle of winter. So we think we always see a summer spike in redemption. We think it'll be even higher this time. Some information about what's in and what's out. Marijuana drinks included. Again, not something in 1971 we thought that would be in the bottle bill, but it is. So a little bit about who we are. So bottle drop centers are our flagship retail centers. We have 22 redemption center locations. We're now actually over 10 express locations. They're big, they're clean. They have reverse vending machines, and then they have a green bag account option at them as well. So the green bag account option is one a lot of people like, and I think not enough people know about, although more and more. At the beginning of last year, we had about 90,000 account holders. We're now well over 200,000 account holders in the state of Oregon. So that's a lot of people with a bottle drop account. And it makes it pretty easy. You just sign up. You can do it at any Express or bottle drop location. You get a key card, and then you get a little key fob or a card. You get a roll of green bags. You just throw all your containers in there, scan it at the door, throw your bag in. We count it, we sort it, and then we credit your account. And there's now an app that you can get for iOS or Android. You can track your balance online. You don't even need your card. You'll be able to put your card on your phone and scan it and then be able to access your funds, which then you can donate to any nonprofit that's signed up in the state of Oregon. You can download it for cash. Or if you spend it in participating stores, you get a 20% bonus on your balance. So people really like the bottle drop account program and have been signing up for it in droves. And actually we're working with the state treasurer's office. We're hoping by the end of this year we'll have integration with the College 529 savings account, so that as you drop your containers, you'll be able to just put it right in your kid's 529 account.
Jules, can I interrupt you? So how are you getting the word out about this program, about the green bag? Because I think it's not widely known still.
Yeah, our market research says that it isn't as well known as it should be, although 200,000 account holders is quite a bit. We've actually had a great partnership with retailers who have been talking about it as well, community groups that have been talking about it. But we're getting the word out. We're doing things like we're tabling at events and signing people up at events. So we were at the Eugene Home and Garden Show. We had a laptop there, and as people came by, we were just signing them up for green bag accounts as they walked by. We are doing a partnership with the Portland Timbers next season. That's a core demographic, sort of young urbanites that might not know about this. And we'll have tabling events outside their games where we'll be signing people up. So we find that's more effective than just blitzing people with fancy ads, but actually getting people accounts and signed up.
Have you thought about partnering with schools, school districts? You know, because we had at one time talked about having collections, you know, bins at different schools as a fundraiser.
It's funny you should mention that. I have a slide on that. It was not a setup, but we did. I'll jump ahead a little bit. We worked with schools on fundraising through the Bottle Drop Give program to get people educated about it. And we did a match for every container that schools raised. We matched, and other participating entities raised during the holiday period, we matched some of that money. And Dallas High School raised $5,000 through that program to help replace their football field. So we've been really trying to focus on that angle. And then we also have a school outreach program where we do presentations with schools. So you can use the account program, which you can return at any Express or Bottle Drop location. You can use the reverse vending machines. You can do a hand count of your containers, and then you get your cash either at the store or at one of our kiosks, and you can get 20% more.
Oh, sorry, Jules. Yeah. Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Dembo. Hello.
Hi.
Nice to see you.
Good to see you.
So I have a question about the future of what you're thinking about regarding the drops, because although, of course, I support this and think it's great, I just... Some of the feedback I got was from the youth is that it's harder now for them to drop off their cans because of having to go to a center. You know, it's not as, you know, not as close to their home if you
right.
can't drive or you're a youth or something like that. And I was just wondering what thought went into if there was anything that's going to change in the future to make that easier.
The Maybe. Orange circle is around Bottle Drop Express, which is exactly the answer to your question. So thank you for teeing that up. The answer is on the next slide.
Okay.
So Bottle Drop Express really came out of an idea that it's not going to be convenient for everybody to go to a redemption center to drop off their green bag. And we need that service available in the community at lots of different places. And most people still go to the grocery store at some time or another. And we've had amazing partnership from grocery stores that have wanted to put in green bag receptacle locations at the grocery store. So if you're going to the grocery store, you can just drop off your bag right there. And then if you wanted to spend your balance in store, you can do it there. Or you can cash out and get it. So, for example, the QFC in your district on Milwaukee, I believe it is actually scheduled for later this year. Mm-hmm. So having them in the neighborhoods and the availability of that to people, I think, is much more convenient than it's much more like going back to the store and dropping it off when you go in to do your shopping anyway.
And then follow up.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair Debra. So going back to the schools issue, having pretty recently been the PTA president at my children's school, we did all sorts of recycling at our school, and we had it available for people to bring in all sorts of materials.
Yeah.
That can work. You probably already know this, and sometimes that leads to a total disaster. And the reason is because that we can't expect teachers to be doing this, and that's not okay. And then the administrators, that's not part of, you know, necessarily their job, so it ended up with volunteers. And then it would be, you'd have a wave of parents who would be really dedicated and would make it happen and then would drive to, you know, then there would be this whole movement of organizing it, where it would be in the school and et cetera. And then sometimes you have people that are not going to want to oversee it.
Right.
And so that, I think, gets a little bit tough. And then we, at least at the schools in my district, for some reason, we have all those really, really old ones.
Yeah.
And we have rats in all of our schools. It's just really unfortunate. And so there, I'm not saying there was necessarily a direct correlation, but there was definitely an issue about cleanliness and how, because people would kind of bring things in, the definition of clean varied. And that, I don't know what the solution is, because I want this to be successful, and that's why I don't know if it has to happen on the exterior of the building mm-hmm. or what you, but I know that you're a very smart man, and I know that you can think about all of those things, but I don't know that all schools in the whole state are ready to just take on something, yet another thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yet another thing. So not that you were suggesting that, but I just wanted to put that out there. So
I appreciate that, Chair Dembrough and Senator Taylor. That's when we work with schools on, for example, our Bottle Drop Give program, our Blue Bag program, and raising money for them, we have a number of different ways that schools can participate, really recognizing the fact that their job is to teach kids, not to collect cans. If their volume is large enough, we'll just go pick it up. If it's sort of middle volume, we get them bags, we supply them, mm-hmm. we try to arrange for an easy place for them to drop them off. And we find that it generally works pretty well. Most schools that we've worked with have been pretty happy with it. But it's a big part of our program is raising money for nonprofits and for schools. For the express sites, those are exclusively right now at grocery stores. But our goal is to have those in enough areas around the state that it's convenient no matter where you live in the state, that you'll have one pretty close to your house. We've opened, I think we're up to 12 of them now. We have 18 more coming in this year, and possibly more than that. They come in different flavors, so you can see the one on the top is from Hawthorne Fred Meyer. That's their bottle room that was outside. It's been redone. So we do a full paint job. We do new machines, including the drop doors. You still have lots of options on how you want to redeem. And then the lower one is St. Helens Safeway, and that's a modified shipping container with solar panels on the top of it. So it's totally solar powered. We've found that different stores, it works in different ways. But the operative goal is to make sure that area stays clean and that it's really convenient for people. So Bottle Drop Give, I've talked a little bit about. We call this our blue bag program, and we just differentiate between the blue bags and the green bags. The blue bags goes to our 501c3s or in schools. So you can enroll in the blue bag program, and there's two ways to do it. Either we can pass out the bags to your school, they can have their parents or supporters put their containers in the bag, and whenever they get dropped off or picked up, it automatically gets credited to that entity. Or you can also just donate through your app directly to an organization. So for example, on my last bag that I dropped, I donated my balance to the Leukemia Lymphoma Society of Oregon, and it's just two clicks through your phone and it's done. We've done quite a bit in the Give program. You'll see in the annual report, last year we did about $350,000 to nonprofits through this program. So it's significant money, and some of our fundraisers do a lot of volume. Just a couple of quick examples. I mentioned Dallas High School. I said 5,000. I guess it was 7,000 in 4 weeks. I should have read my own slide. You have a copy of a letter to the editor that they wrote in front of you or on OLIS. They really liked the program. We did a partnership in Roseburg with Saving Grace, which is a pet adoption center in Roseburg. And there we actually did a can drive at the center in Roseburg and had people come in As you can see, $2,200 in 4 hours. That's pretty good for a small nonprofit. A lot of people in that community really stepped up, and you have a news article on that as well in front of you. And then we also are doing things where there's emergencies that come up. So we had an example recently with a young woman who's trying to raise money for a transplant, for a kidney transplant in Medford through Bottles and Cans. We're setting up systems where if there's a natural disaster or some other community event, we can raise money pretty quickly for folks. Bottle drop refill. This is a lot of fun if you like to drink beer, and I do. But the bottle drop refill is a new program that we're debuting where we'll have beer bottles that are refillable by the brewery. So as you know, in many countries like Canada and Germany and other places, and it used to be in the United States, when you finish your beer, it got washed and cleaned and then back to the brewery for reuse. It's a lot cheaper for the breweries, and it's a lot better for the environment, sort of a win for everybody. We can cut probably 10 to 20% off the packaging cost for a brewery doing this. And that program is launching later this year. We've already had the pilot going with it, so that's pretty exciting.
So are those pints?
Are they honest pints?
That was I've been waiting for that question.
They are actually, one is a 12-ounce, there's two choices. There's a 12-ounce bottle, and then there's a 500-milliliter bottle, which is 16.9 ounces. So you're getting extra 0.9 ounces on your honest pint.
That's fairly honest, yeah.
Yeah.
Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Dembrough. So in the calculation, are you factoring in the weight and the truck, the fuel cost? I just didn't see it on there. Of course you are. So
yeah.
That's okay.
And you mean for environmental benefits? Sorry, Senator Taylor, for the environmental benefits or for the cost?
For both.
Yeah.
There's the weight and one of the reasons, obviously, is the weight of the trucks and the extra fuel and the weight on the roads. And
It's a really good question, Senator Taylor. The reason this program works and the reason that we're able to do it is because the marginal cost of bolting the system on to our existing system is pretty low.
Mm-hmm.
The big challenge in a refillable bottle system and the reason they went away in the United States was that there was no centralized collection point, there was no logistics to pick up all the bottles and transport them, and there was no centralized hub for processing. We have all that. We're running those trucks anyway. Now, to your point, which is very astute, you're right, a refillable bottle is a heavier, thicker gauge bottle. So it does weigh more, but we can still cube out a truck and run it, build that into our cost analysis. And what brewers see is not an itemized list of costs. They just see an average cost per bottle that they just, so they buy it like they'd buy any other bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cheaper for them than buying a one-way glass bottle. So they just see that it's cheaper. What they don't see is all the embedded wash costs, transportation costs, and all that that's inside it. But the secret is you only have to flip a bottle a couple of times before suddenly that bottle cost is a lot less, and then we have all that headroom to build it in. So we're starting with beer. We'd like to expand to wine soon. We've had some really good productive conversations with wineries. Soda could theoretically be in this bottle as well. And I say beer, and all of my cider friends would slap me. Cider as well. Alcoholic products. But we're really excited about this. And then finally, bottle drop plastics. So I mentioned this facility in St. Helens that we're part owners of. 17 million pounds of plastic got recycled there last year. We've had to upgrade and expand that facility and hire at that facility. So the expansion of the bottle bill has actually meant quite a bit more investment in jobs in Oregon, because it just takes more people and more equipment to process all the extra stuff that's coming through. So I've talked a little bit about the fact that we're vertically integrated. The other part of this is that we produce an incredibly clean stream of recycled material, grade A, and that is useful for making new products. It's better than having dirtier stuff that's harder to sort out, and that's one of the reasons we can process locally. And then I want to get into the annual report here, but to prepare for the expansion, as I mentioned, it took quite a bit of resources. So not only did we spend, as you see, $3 million in new machinery and improvements, but we have to ship about 54 extra truckloads a week. That's a lot of trucks per week just to deal with the expanded volume. And we've invested in more jobs, new locations. So getting ready for this expansion was definitely something that gave us a little bit of heartburn. But so far, so good. It seems like it's working out. We're able to keep up. And we have a lot of people signing up for the for our bottle drop programs. You can see that's a little bit of an old map, heat map of where all our account holders are, and it's quite a bit there. So I also now want to turn your attention to this document that you have in front of you. This is the first time we've produced this report, and there's a lot of information in here for a short document, so feel free to spend some time with it and ask me some questions later. But this was, you know, for years, we've struggled with how do we tell the story of what Oregon Beverage Recycling Cooperative is doing and the story of redemption in the state of Oregon. And it became clear to us, especially after some conversations that we had here in the legislature last session, and Senator Benz will remember this because he was on the committee, that we weren't doing a great job of getting out in a transparent way what's happening and what we're doing. So rather than having to make people ferret it out through public records requests and investigations on websites and various things, we thought, we got a great story to tell. Let's just put it out there. Let's do an annual report. And some of the numbers on here are actually numbers that we're not, the finals of them, we're not required to submit to OLCC until months later. But we want to make sure that you guys had this and that you had it before session so that you could do something with it. The operative things on this annual report that I think are really important that I want to draw your attention to. You'll see kind of the, I don't know what our color green is called. Is that a lime green? I'm not sure. But it's the lime green circle that says $25 million estimated value of 2017 unredeemed deposits. So that's it. That's what the unredeemed deposits were in the system. And it's important to understand some context around that number for 2017. Most years going forward, you'll be able to look at that $25 million, put a zero on the end of it, and that's the number of unredeemed containers, because it's 10 cents, right? So if there's 25 million, then there's 250 million unredeemed containers. 2017, that number's a little bit funky and somewhat meaningless for the total number of containers, because we had a deposit change midway through the year in April. So you had one quarter of the year where you'd have to multiply by 20, not 10, to get to the number of containers. And then going forward after that, you'd also have to incorporate. We saw a lot of hoarding of containers at the early part of 2017 of people that bought at 5 cents and then returned at 10 cents. Actually, for the month of May, we were 110% redeemed for the month of May, which is literally impossible. But it was just all these people bringing in containers. And the beverage industry and OBRC, we just paid that out. If you brought in a container after April 1st, that was you got 10 cents. So there are some deposits that got double counted. But the net is $25 million in unredeemed deposits. You can compare that to our annual budget of $34 million. So it offsets a good portion of that budget, but not all of it. And so on net, beverage distributors and the beverage industry does pay into the system to make the system work. And that's been true for a while, and we'll continue to provide these numbers. And we are currently working with OLCC in conversation with them to have them review all of this data and make sure that it's all independently reviewed and that you can have confidence in all these numbers. So we want to make sure that it's fully transparent. We're working with the OLCC on that.
And Jules, what is that revenue, if you could call it that, used for? I mean, the unredeemed deposits that's not going back out.
That's right.
How is it used? Do you account for that?
We do. So that $25 million goes directly into the build-out of the bottle drop expresses, the bottle drop redemption centers, the running of the extra 54 trucks, all of the infrastructure that it takes to run this system. And as I say, it doesn't cover all of it, but it covers a lot of it. And then the beverage industry pays in on top of that, as well as grocers actually share in the cost of bottle drop centers and bottle drop expresses. So there's some balancing there as well, too, and they've been great partners in it. What it does not include, and I want to draw your attention to number two down here in your footnotes, it does not include scrap. So there's sometimes a misconception that we sell all of the material for scrap and then that goes in our budget as well. It actually doesn't. It never touches our budget. Any value that's there goes right back to the distributors and manufacturers. And as you might imagine, it's sort of if the price of aluminum goes up, the cost of their can that they're buying in the first place to put their beverage in is also going up. And then, so they're not necessarily making any more money when the price of recycled aluminum goes up. It's just offsetting the cost of what would normally be passed on to the consumer. It's just an offset in material cost. And that's for aluminum. Glass and plastic are pretty low value. In fact, glass is basically worthless right now. And plastic, because of the China issue, is pretty worthless right now, too. There's some value in it, but it's a tough operation. So we do that. We recycle the glass. We recycle the plastic because it's important to do it, and that's what we do. But we essentially subsidize that operation to recycle that glass and plastic. So there's not really a lot of value there. You can see in the annual budget breakdown the percentages that go to each of the different areas of the program. We just wanted to include that so you could see sort of where by magnitude the different areas of the program are. So as you can see, the bottle drop centers and green bag program is obviously the biggest portion of what we do, and that's not surprising. The other thing I'd point out is that the green bag program, you mentioned getting it out there, getting more people signed up. The green bag program is our highest cost activity that we engage in. It is significantly more expensive to process a container through a green bag than it is through a reverse vending machine. And just simple logic bears that out, right? In a reverse vending machine, people are feeding in a container into a machine that's recognizing it, counting it, putting it onto a conveyor belt that automatically goes to a compactor where it gets compacted. No human ever touches it in that route. It gets counted and spits out a receipt. A green bag comes in. It has to be manually picked up, manually opened, manually dumped into a sorter, then sorted at that location, then manually credited back to a person, and then it goes into the system. So it's a very – and then once you add in the express, where we're having to haul those green bags from a grocery store uncrushed – hauling air is expensive, right? Hauling air from – the grocery store back to the center is expensive. So I want to be clear that we're committed to this green bag program because it keeps the redemption rate high. And our belief is that without the green bag program, redemption rates would fall because there isn't the convenience. And Senator Taylor, to your point, you wouldn't have a grocery store right down the street to be able to do it at. You'd have to drive somewhere and feed machines. And frankly, people just don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. But it does mean higher costs in our system that we have to invest in to do that. And as that grows as a proportionate share of our redemption, those proportionate costs per container will rise. The other important thing I want to point out in here, so we talked a little bit about the redemption rate increase. You can see down here on this page, this arrow, this line going up, returns through bottle drop. So the legislature had set a goal of 60% of returns through bottle drop, and it's a little spooky. We actually hit 60% in the last week of December of last year, and the goal was to hit it by 2018. So it's there, and it continues to rise. Every time we open a new bottle drop center, bottle drop express, that number goes up a little bit. So now 60% of every container is being returned through our system. I know I'm over time here, so I'm going to finish up. You can read the rest at your leisure. I think most of it should be pretty straightforward, and we've already covered it. I do want to point out that the cover is not just fun, bubbly art. It's not just a champagne glass. It's actually a map of the state of Oregon with a proportional heat map on it of where returns come in. So you can get a sense of where returns come from in the state of Oregon and by material type as well. So I hope that that gives you an overview of where we're at. We believe that expansion has been a success and that the deposit increase has been a success. We continue to see people signing up for programs and taking advantage of it. We have, for redemption centers, we're currently in process. For a new redemption center, we have four in process, Corvallis, Springfield, Newport, and Southeast 82nd and Holgate in Portland. And then we'll do at least one more probably this year. Our highest priority areas are Coos Bay, Oregon, and then Northeast Portland, actually. So if you know a place on Sandy, let us know. The hardest thing about building out new redemption centers is real estate's really expensive, and especially in urban areas, competing with a mixed-use multifamily housing development is just hard. So finding the right property at the right price is always a challenge, but we've got a team working on it, and we're expanding as fast as we can. So thank you very much. We've got one more brief panel after this, but I'd be happy to take any questions you have.
Jules, let me just follow up on your last point about the challenges of locating. There was a time, I remember, where OVRC was facing some challenges with respect to the zoning in areas where they wanted to locate a bottle drop. Is that still a problem? Is there anything that we can do to help with that?
Sir, Chair Dembro, I appreciate you asking. It's a continual challenge, and some of it is just going to be part of the friction of citing anything anywhere, right? And every town, every jurisdiction has its own zoning and quirks, and that solar-powered bottle drop express, that's not a redemption center, but getting the permitting for the seismic footing that went into that caused one of our employees practically to have an aneurysm. So it's there's a lot more behind the scenes than what it looks like. It's not just dumping a shipping container and walking away. For the redemption centers, we've certainly had jurisdictions that have said, you're an industrial use, you're not a commercial use. Every place we've been located where a commercial use, we believe absolutely we're a commercial use. You do not want families and kids driving around semis, going into big work areas and trying to park and return their containers in industrial areas. It just doesn't work. We're more of sort of a strip mall kind of location. And not only we don't think that's safe for the customer, we don't think that's convenient for the customer anyway. So that's sometimes been a challenge, and we've just had to convince cities that we're not making anything, we're not processing anything, we're simply collecting, doing some minor compaction and sending them on back to the main plant for processing, which is industrial. But that does continue to be a challenge. It comes up again and again. We have one center right now that there was a neighbor that just didn't want us there from the beginning, and so challenged that our siting with the city to Luba, which remanded it to the city, and it's just, you know, legal fees to cost a lot of money and increase the cost of the system. So to your question of can the legislature do anything, it'd be premature if I said yes. I think, you know, local jurisdictions have their rules and regulations for a reason, and I think we all know the challenges of preemption of any of that, but it does definitely cause cost in the system.
Thank you. Other questions, colleagues? I do have another.
Yeah.
So in terms of the transition from 5 cent to 10 cent, you know, I know when we were first contemplating this back in 2011, you know, there was concern about, well, there were a couple of concerns. One was that, you know, we were not meeting our targets, and that a lot of that seemed to have been due to water at that point, you know, because for the traditional products, the redemption rates were actually quite high, but for water, that hadn't quite caught on. It sounds as if people are finally getting used to water and are now redeeming them, and they're catching on to the new product pretty quickly as well. But going back to the 5 cent to 10 cent, we were really concerned about the impact of that on low-income people, and, you know, was that going to discourage people from buying the products that they needed? Do you have any, at least anecdotal, evidence of that happening?
Senator Dembro, it's a great question, and let me just address the first part of what you said first, and then I'll address the second part. The first part to water, and we still see some of that lagging a little bit in terms of overall redemption, but it definitely did increase with the 10 cents. We'll see a lagging again with the expanded class, but it will increase, and I want to talk about something we're doing on that in just a second. But to answer your second question, in terms of sales, we don't really have any insight into that, so I can't answer that. I don't know the answer. But in terms of overall volume of returns, volumes are going up a lot, which would indicate that there's, A, more coming in, but that, B, we haven't seen a lot happening around, you know, an overall decrease in beverage sales that would be attributable to that. But that's all not information that we have. The challenge projecting going forward with the expanded class. Sometimes people ask us, hey, well, what do you think the redemption rate is going to be for the expanded class? And the answer is genuinely, we don't know, because for traditional beverages that come in, we get some sense of overall aggregate sales that then we can compare to what we project returns will be. So obviously the redemption rate is your number of containers returned divided by number of containers sold. So even with the new expanded class, obviously the numerator would be hard to know for what the projected return is going to be. But the challenge is we don't know the denominator. We don't know what the total universe of that beverage sold in Oregon is because they're distributed in different ways, they're new classes. A year from now, we'll know a little bit more when we have a sense to calibrate it, chance to calibrate it. But right now, it's who knows. So in order to protect against maybe a potential decrease in the redemption rate, we've also started a partnership with Oregon Community Foundation called Bottle Drop Fund, where if for whatever reason, let's say the redemption rate fell next year and then came back up as people were figuring it out, we would take the increment of unredeemed deposits that came in that was above what we needed for cooperative operations below that 80% threshold, and we'll give it to Oregon Community Foundation. And they'll use it to build an endowment that will help support good environmental programs. So we want to just say, hey, listen, we want you to get your deposit back. And if for whatever reason you don't get your deposit back, we'll either use that money to invest in the system or it will go to a fund that will help support good environmental skill building and other works in the state of Oregon.
Okay, Jules, thank you very much for coming down.
Oh, I thought I was gonna escape.
Oh, oops.
Sorry.
Almost yeah. Escaped.
Sorry. The can I go ahead and ask?
Yes, please.
So the 130, I just ran the numbers, $130 million worth of people paying in and then getting all but $26 million back, about 18% on the numbers you have here. Would that be correct? When I say they don't get that back, somebody didn't go turn their stuff in, so that's sure. $26 million. Now, as the volume goes up of stuff that comes through the door, do you anticipate that the amount that's not returned will remain roughly the same?
It's a great question, Chair Dembrough, Senator Benz. If I understand your question correctly, bear with me with a quick thought exercise that you're smarter than I am, so you'll be ahead of it. And it's funny that the numbers actually work out this way by coincidence. So let's make it simple and just say that the entire universe of containers sold in Oregon is 100 containers, just for easy round numbers. We were at 64% redemption prior to the deposit change. So that's 64 containers returned, 36 containers not returned. 36 containers not returned is $1.80 at 5 cents. Now the redemption rate's at 82%. We have 82 containers returned, 18 containers not returned. At a 10 cents each, that's $1.80. It's exactly the same amount by coincidence. But the important part of that is that whereas before we had $1.80 to help offset processing 64 containers, now we have $1.80 to help offset processing 82 containers. So our amount of money per container just went down, and we had to get more efficient at processing those containers. Now you add an expansion in the expanded class, and we don't know exactly what that'll be, but just for round numbers, you know, let's say we're at 130, 140 containers now sold in the state of Oregon. The amount of the money will go up, but you're still at the same cost per container to be able to process that extra. So we do expect there to be a proportional increase, but it should be, all things being equal, a proportional to our costs increase in running the system. Did that answer your question, Senator?
Not quite, but I did understand it, which is
that's a first step, I guess.
Step ahead for me. If I can follow up.
Yes.
Yeah. So what I'm getting at here is this: it said there was zero cost to the taxpayer, but in fact, this is a program with a cost, and the cost is the container's not returned. So if I, don't return 18% of my containers, then I have an 18% tax, if you will. And that's what's happening across the board. Now, we could call, and it's not going to happen to everybody, and we could run it across the entire 130 million or whatever it is to figure out what that cost to society is. But it is somewhat odd that we would say this doesn't have a cost to everybody, because of course it does. And it has a cost in the sense that you have to drive back and turn your cans in. You have to keep them together. And someone else uses that $130 million while you're not. I mean, there's all those costs that are there in this program. So it would be worthwhile to call out in these reports
what it is actually costing Oregonians in general, not specifically, but in general for this program. That would be, and it's going to become more interesting as time passes, and instead of just cans, it involves all this other stuff that usually just makes its way into curbside trash. And I'm going to take a wild guess and say that it will be likely that your overall recovery will drop with that expansion, but we shall see. I mean, it'll be interesting. You get people trained up, who knows how it might work, but there still is a cost, and I just wish that cost was called out more clearly to the people of Oregon.
Chair Denbrough, Senator Benz, I want to make sure that I'm very clear. When I say there's no cost, I mean that there's no cost to the taxpayers. There's no tax dollars going into this program. You are right that it does cost money to run this program, and it costs money from the beverage industry that funds the program and ostensibly has costs in that. It costs money from the grocery stores that help pay for some of this program. It costs money in a voluntary way if you choose not to get your deposit back, although we're investing in the hopes that it'll be easy for everybody to get their deposit back, and so there won't be 18 containers or whatever. But it does cost money to do that. And so I think the question is, what's it worth to you? In that we have a program that's been extremely successful at keeping litter off the beaches, out of our streams, at creating a clean stream of recyclables that isn't getting dumped in a landfill or going over to China on creating jobs here. We think that has a value. It's not costing any taxpayer dollars, but I take your point that there is a cost to it, and we'll try to do a better job of calling that out.
Yeah, Mr.
But there are also avoided costs, right? I mean, we need to do something with this product no matter what. Somebody's going to have to be hauling it.
Chair Denbrough, that's exactly right. And if it was not coming back through the bottle bill, it would likely be going back through other kinds of collection systems that have costs that get passed on, and also produce a stream of recyclables that's important, but not as good as what we're producing, and not as efficient.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
One last remark. I do not want it thought that I ignore the benefits of the program. They've been called out in your report very well. But what is not called out is the cost to folks for the program. So I don't, invariably when I bring this up, I'm instantly told, now Senator Benz, you are ignoring the benefits as though that means I get to ignore the cost. That's not right. We need to call out the cost. And then if you wish in the next breath call out the benefits, please do. But the cost is super important. And it would be really nice if you could call out all of those costs that I just did. You just said you summarized them much better than did I, and so that nobody thinks that because your program is a good program, I think it's made less good by failing to call those obvious things out because it looks as though they're trying to be hidden by the obvious benefits. So please don't. I mean, I'd be happier if it was called out.
Chair Denbrough, Senator Benz, here's the offer I'd make to you, Senator. This is the first time we've ever produced this, and we produced that. Because we thought it contained a transparency that we had never done before and that we thought would be open book. I would love to work with you to understand what else we can consider putting in here. We're not shy. We think we got a great story to tell, and we're happy to consider how we measure some of that. Now, to your point about overall costs, measuring what is the cost to the distributor, the retailer, some of that is very diffuse and hard to quantify, and I'm not sure we have the capability to quantify all of it. But I would love to work with you to think about how else we can improve this report.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, one final question from the Vice Chair.
Thank you. It's a good segue in the cost because my retailers are pretty upset with what it costs them to deal with the bottles. And could you explain their costs that they incur, because if they sell a bottle, they take a dime in, and when they redeem it, they give the dime back. And so what costs do they, and you had mentioned also in your discussion that they have to commit funding to this also. So could you explain that a little bit?
Yes, Chair Denbrough, Vice Chair Olson. Stores do incur costs, and we'll actually have a representative from NWGA coming up, and you can probably ask him some of that. Sorry to throw you into the bus, Sean. But the basic math is that they pick up around half as a group within a certain zone of a bottle drop center. And that is a cost to retailers. Now, they see some benefit as well in that there's a reason that I won't name who it was and out him on the record, but there was an executive from a major grocery chain that you all know in Oregon. I was at a Timbers game, and he saw me across the concourse and fought his way across the concourse to me and put his finger in my chest and said, "When am I getting my Bottle Drop Express at my store?" They like some of these additional upgraded options because it brings foot traffic in the door. It allows people to spend that balance in store, and that's why they offer that 20% bonus. So that 20% Bottle Drop Plus is actually a program of the retailers, not our program, because they see some extra benefit in the store. But for sure, there are retailers that are, and you're going to hear this, that are struggling with dirty bottle room areas, with homelessness and vagrancy in their bottle rooms, with other kinds of costs that they have. So there definitely is a cost to retailers.
Okay, Jules, thank you very much.
Thank you for being generous with your time. I appreciate it.
Great. Okay, we have a panel from the field. We have Pam Peck from Recyclers, Becky Bochel from OLCC, and Sean Miller from the Grocers. Why don't we just go in order? Pam, you'll start.
Okay, great. Good afternoon, Chair Dumbro and members of the committee. My name is Pam Peck, and I'm the Resource Conservation and Recycling Manager at Metro, but I'm here today in my capacity as a board member of the Association of Oregon Recyclers, and thank you for letting us have some time today. AOR is a nonprofit trade association that's worked to advance recycling and waste prevention in Oregon through its diverse membership since 1977. Our members in the private and public sectors, which include OBRC, are involved in every aspect of recycling. They process and collect recyclable materials, manage recycling programs, and provide education to the public about how they can reduce, reuse, and recycle. New rules in China are restricting the amount of recycling we can send there. And today I'm going to talk briefly about these restrictions and the impact they're having on recycling here in Oregon and how systems like Oregon's Bottle Bill play a role. As China has become a manufacturing giant, it produces many of the products that Oregonians and Americans buy. And markets in China for the recycled materials used to make those products have grown relative to markets in the United States. In addition, many Chinese manufacturers have been willing and able to pay more for the recyclables that we collect here, more than can be paid in the United States in some cases. So companies that get the recyclables after they're collected have sent them to China. And as you all know, bless you.
Thank you.
As you all know, this hasn't always been the case. For example, Oregon used to recycle most of its paper locally to make newsprint in local paper mills. The closure of mills in Newburgh and Oregon City has left us without those local mills that can use the broad range of papers we collect in our homes and businesses in Oregon. The Chinese buyers had been very willing to purchase that paper in the past at very good prices. The new restrictions, which you heard about briefly and I'm sure you've been hearing about in the news, are called the National Sword as a set of policies, and they're really impacting recycling across the globe. China consumes over 60% of all the recyclable materials produced in the world, so this is affecting programs in Europe, Australia, Asia, you know, all over North America. The new policy applies to items that are commonly collected here in our programs in Oregon, and those include a set of plastics you'll hear called 3-7. Well, what does that mean? Well, those are plastics used to package many of our consumer products, shampoo bottles, yogurt tubs, takeout containers, those clear clamshells are some examples. The other material we're seeing a lot of restrictions on are mixed grades of paper. And so that would be junk mail, cereal boxes, cracker boxes, and your paper towel rolls, so those kinds of things. And what they've done in China is they've set new standards for contamination that are very high. So those standards are at 0.05%, and they're extremely challenging to meet for a number of reasons. And while recycling in Oregon has weathered previous restrictions from the Chinese government, the rules that went into effect in January are more restrictive, and they really are having further reaching consequences on recycling. AOR actually applauds the actions that China is taking. They're taking these actions to reduce pollution, conserve industries, close down polluting mills, and to clean up their recycling. We believe this is also the direction we need to go here in Oregon. But of course, we have to move through these challenges created by China. But systems like Oregon's bottle bill have proved to be very resilient and are not having the kind of problems we're having with other parts of our recycling markets. And it's something our state should be really proud of, the system that's created with the bottle bill, because it has avoided this kind of problem. And since coming to fruition in 1971, the bottle bill has really established a fantastic system. You've heard Mr. Bailey talk about that today. And it's really set the tone for an ethos of sustainable materials management here in Oregon. As was mentioned earlier, the plastics collected through the bottle bill are recycled right here in Oregon, and they're turned into products by local manufacturers and other manufacturers in the U.S., some of it turned right back into bottles that can have beverages in it again. AOR and the businesses and public agencies involved in recycling, along with leadership from Oregon's Department of Environmental Quality, are currently working together very hard to look at how we can adapt to these changes, how we can clean up our recycling, and how we can continue Oregon's tradition of conserving resources and managing materials sustainably. We look forward to doing more of this work in the future and looking at how we can reduce and reuse, in addition to how we can make all of our recycling programs stronger and more connected to manufacturing in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Becky.
Hi. Good afternoon, Chair Devereaux, members. For the record, my name is Becky Vogel with the Oregon Liquor Control Commission's Bottle Bill Program. I'm happy to be here this afternoon to give you a brief overview of the April 1, 2017 and January 1, 2018 changes to the Bottle Bill. For both of these milestones, OLCC provided information on our website, did mailings to our licensees, and sent out press releases and information on social media. We also adopted rules regarding the expansion, and while rulemaking was open, adopted a rule that allows OLCC to require an audit to determine the accuracy of return data that OBRC and non-member distributors must provide to OLCC each July. Prior to January 1, OBRC sent staff to stores to scan expansion beverages. Any containers that aren't recognized by reverse vending machines must be hand-counted by store staff. So this project was very helpful to both customers and stores when on January 1, customers could feed the new containers into machines and most were recognized. In spite of providing lots of information to customers and stores, some customers and stores don't understand all the details and call or email with questions. Customers, for instance, don't understand that the expansion beverages have a refund value even though they may not have OR 10 cents listed on the container for the remainder of 2018. Customers always sometimes assume that a store won't accept containers if they don't have a reverse vending machine, which is not the case. An issue I frequently hear about stores from is that they don't have enough space to store the increased volume of empties. When I hear that, I pass that information on to OBRC, and their staff have been very responsive in getting containers picked up. OBRC's last quarterly report on the web, as you've seen today, shows an 82% redemption rate. I believe the increased number of calls I receive is attributed to that increase in container returns. I'm the only employee in OLCC's bottle bill program, and many days I'm very overwhelmed with calls and emails. But it's good to have a partner with OBRC, partnership with them, and that I can refer many of those calls to OBRC. It gets the caller a quick and appropriate response and takes a little pressure off of my position. I thank you for this opportunity to speak to you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Becky. Sean.
Chair Devereaux, members of the committee, Sean Miller. I'm here today on behalf of the Northwest Grocery Association, and the retailers that I represent have been on basically on the front lines of the bottle bill since 1971. And so, again, these are the high volume returns. So the larger grocery stores, most people go buy their product, and that's where they actually go and return their product since the inception of the bottle bill. I know, and Jules gave you a good history of some of the significant changes, but that 2007 date when the added water and flavored water. And I'll also add one other significant change then that was a big game changer in the industry is they required the universal brand acceptance. So at the time, if we sold that particular product or sold a label like a Kirkland label for Costco or a Safeway label for Fred Meyer, you had to return that product back to that store. If you, in addition to just water, they changed where you could return any of those products anywhere, and that was obviously a huge volume increase at the time. 2009, in response to that, is when OBRC actually started, it was formed to improve that customer return experience on those high volume grocery stores. In the 80s, I worked in a family grocery store in Staten, Oregon called Girard's Supermarket. When you're in high school and you work in a supermarket in the 80s, you work in the bottle room. Before me was Senator Girard, working in his dad's grocery store in Girard's in Staten. And so I have a lot of experience in that room, so does he. But the bottle room's changed over time and obviously has evolved to what you just experienced. But at the time, you remember going through the front doors of the grocery store, you had these big bins where you'd go, they'd come in with their bags and you would count those right there. You'd wheel them through the store to the back room. And it was all done in a store with a small room where you had to actually hand sort them, count everything out and give someone a slip. The fundamental problem of the retailer on the bottle bill from its inception was, having an open container, come back into the store, an empty container where we're selling food. And we're obviously trying to keep that store. I remember store manager at this time, you want to keep that store just as clean as a hospital. That's how they think, because this is where you're buying your produce, your food for dinner that evening. And to have that in the store experience was very difficult. Senator Taylor, you mentioned, rats, flies, bugs, those kind of issues. When you talk about these kinds of products, it's a natural, they're attracted to those products. And so having it in the store was the biggest problem at the time. And Senator Olson, you also mentioned cost. The cost of the grocer, I know just, I think we've heard up to about 3 cents per container at the time that we were just managing just to hire people like me to do all that. And so the experience in the store, then obviously about 20 years later, moved out of the store, reverse vending machines, trying to contain that product today to where OBRC over this time, trying to manage the bottle bill in the most efficient way that does the best for the consumer. And so, again, when 3145 passed now, and with the further products of juices, tea, sports drinks, handling that product is just, and you mentioned space. Space is so much a value in a store because we want to sell food. That's really our main priority. And so OBRC does a fantastic job working with our grocery stores. Every community is different. Bottle Drop Express. They work with our stores and our chains and all the stores in the area, identifying traffic patterns, trying to figure out the best strategy for that particular area. Because it's our incentive to, if we can get every single, bottle out of the store and still satisfy the consumer, the customer, that's our goal. And so, again, they've been a tremendous partner, and we are looking forward to the build-out on this year. And, again, it's been a good partnership from the very start. But, again, industries manage this from 1971, from now. And yes, there's costs involved, but there's going to be costs involved in all different ways we've been able to do this. Our goal is to do what's, best for the customer and try to, again, remove some of this from the store experience. So thank you, Senator.
Great. Thank you very much, Sean. And I have a question for you. It's sort of following up on what I asked Mr. Bailey before. Have you seen a decline in bottle sales since the increase in the deposit?
Mr. Chair, I've not heard of that. Now, again, I think it's a good question because sales could vary, and I only have get industry, and I've not heard of that. So I guess I'll go back and ask the question, and maybe either the distributors or manufacturers may be able to help me with that. But I have not seen that.
Great. Vice Chair.
Thank you. Many folks have told me that a lot of times they just walk out and dump particularly their water bottles into the recycle bin, and they don't take them back and get their nickels. So what's the process there? Because I know people dump cans in there and all kind of stuff. And my waste hauler has to pick it up and sort it. So can you tell me the process there?
Well, those, it would depend on where, you know, where you are in the state, but those would go with your recycling to the material recovery facility, sort of closest to where you live, and they would be sorted. So in some cases, they would end up in those mixed bales of 3 through 7 plastic that I just talked about that are having a lot harder time getting marketed, but it would really depend on that facility's ability to sort that material out, which really varies around the state.
Follow up?
Yes.
Because we kind of confuse the folks, and we say you go to the grocery store and you buy your water and you buy your cans, and then we also go out there and we give you this great big recycle bin where we want you to put everything in there, your cardboard, your milk containers, and all of that stuff. And so they're thinking, well, I'll just dump it all in here instead of putting it in the green bag or whatever. So it's kind of, we're kind of cooking our own goose a little bit in the fact that we want to recycle, but we maybe give too many options.
Well, there is certainly a trade-off moving to co-mingling. It creates that convenience for people. So we see more material coming in because we've created that convenience. But at the same time, then we have to be able to sort it really well and sort it to what the markets that are available. So one of the things that we're working on is really to communicate to the public really clearly about what is on that list and what goes in there. So we know a lot of things that shouldn't be in the recycling end up in there. So as much as we can encourage people to return those systems through the bottle bill program, we certainly do that.
Follow up. I got one little crazy idea though. If they throw it in the green bag and they're too lazy to take it to the bottle drop, because right now my bottle drop is 10 miles away, but if they're too lazy to take it, if they recycled it in a thing, would that make it easy for the recycler to pull it out of there?
Probably not. Any kind of film bag material like that is really problematic.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But just to follow up on that, so the recycler is not able to capture the value of the deposit.
Right, correct. Because that material is coming in. I mean, I think if they could separate it out completely, but they're not really able to do that in most cases.
And Jules loves that because that's the non-refundable area that they get to play with. Right, Jules?
He's not talking. He's not at the dais. Senator Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Sean, can we, or have I just not noticed the dramatic drop in the cost of stuff I buy at the grocery store now that burden has been shifted? Because one of the arguments I was using all the time was that we are paying more for groceries because of the incredible burden on stores to load those cans and run them all back, and they had to be raising the cost of something. Now that burden has been lifted, and thus we can all anticipate a sudden and abrupt drop in grocery prices, especially beer. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, Senator Benz, the grocery business is incredibly competitive.
Okay. Never mind.
Yeah.
So the follow-up and yes. The real question is, as you heard in my questions, Jules, whatever the constructor that we've put together to get people to pick stuff up is a positive in the sense that they are picking it up and we don't have to stumble over cans where we don't want to see them and trash being recycled. What has always bothered me is the failure to appropriately reflect and label the cost. So there's always little things left out, and on volume businesses, they add up to a lot. Mm-hmm. So one of the little things that's always irked me is the value of the can. And of course, when I buy a can of pop, I pay not only for the pop, I pay for the can. And when the can goes, I don't get that value back. Either when I get my dime back, I mean, I've lost that value to the store that sold it. The question, again, isn't that I'm not asking for it back. I'm simply asking that it be accounted for so that we can show the people of Oregon what clean beaches and streets and everything else actually costs. So it would be a great help to me if you could help me and Jules put together an accounting format that captures what now you grocers are charging for different elements of this circular arrangement we've created. So I don't. Mm-hmm. It's a long way of just warning you that I'll be calling.
Forewarned.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you all three very much. And Jules, for this very informative briefing. So we look forward to seeing next year's report, Jules, so we can see just how much more progress you're making.
And we want to see that beard be a little longer.
My wife doesn't know.
Okay, so with that, colleagues, I'm going to adjourn the meeting. We don't have meetings tentatively scheduled for the rest of this week, but we'll see. We are adjourned.